Get a friend, get informed, and get involved. It's We Are Not Cattle Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to We Are Not Cattle Radio, and good evening. It is the 10th day of July, 2014. I'm your host, Jake Counts, and I'll be live here for the next hour. Thank you, everybody, for listening live. Those of you that do chime in to listen live, thank you so much for making us part of your evening. As we try to eliminate the status quo and move people more towards a productive discussion of human liberty and how we should actually progress in this planet, and not infight about is it racist or white privilege or any of those things that are basically distractionary issues. No, not saying that white privilege doesn't exist, but it'll be a moot point in about 25 years when the white race, when the Anglo race will no longer be the dominant race here in America. So instead of running the hamster wheel, we would actually like to talk about things that actually do matter. And joining with me for the discussion tonight is the I guess co-owner and co-founder of OneStepBeyond.me, Josh Wiley. So thanks for coming on, Josh.
Thanks for having me, Jake. Although I would like to say my new handle for all internet activities is Spider Jerusalem. It's either going to be that or Josh Freeman.
Oh, interesting.
No, neither of those things are actually true. It's just a gag. I was joking with Robert the other night about how frustrating it is that quote-unquote liberty activists kind of use false names.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people you're really hiding from at that point are your friends. So, because they know who you are.
you're not fooling anybody at that point, I would assume. Well, speaking of not fooling people, I wanted to get into a little bit of an interesting discussion tonight. And this is part and parcel while I had you on, because the topic for the show, if people didn't have an opportunity to read it, or if you just download the podcast and listen to it on your daily commute or whatever, we do appreciate that. So tonight we are going to, episode info is going to be about rabbit holes. Now, the interesting thing that I came across, actually, I broke out of the Matrix, I would say about 7 years ago. And within that 7 years, I went down about every different rabbit hole you could go down. The Illuminati, sacred geometry, ancient aliens. I've touched them all. As Josh shows off his occulted shirt and his occulted tattoo. All right, anyway.
I'm tagged.
You are tagged. You might be QR tagged or even RFID tagged also.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you never know.
So, once again, the understanding of rabbit holes is kind of interesting in and of itself, where you go with it, how it kind of promotes this idea of research, which is, you know, the one thing that I found that was very, very beneficial is understanding research, how to do research. And my wife and I talked about this a couple of times because she is an English teacher. And so we always used to talk about, you know, citing critical sources and going from the original first-hand accounts and not some second- or third-hand account. And that's why when I got into a Facebook debate, which I don't do anymore, I've actually removed myself from Facebook debating. So there is only one more step, everybody, and it is coming eventually. So as soon as we get the social network or the social my Twitter prowess up, I will probably be leaving Facebook. So just giving you guys a heads up to all of my friends that are on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter because as of right now, I'm really seeing little value in what I get. I don't like to take surveys. I don't like really pictures of kittens in weird positions, and I don't like stupid videos. So I'm starting to really move away from Facebook, even though I do have guilty pleasures of watching some of those crazy videos every once in a while.
Are you saying
I pull up some good stuff.
You don't like seeing the same meme show up like six times in your newsfeed posted by like six different anarcho-capitalists who are all sharing it with one another?
Yeah, as we have a proverbial mental and ideological circle jerk. Yeah, I'm totally done with that. But my wife was actually in the other room, said I actually do like those. Now, I will say that I do have a guilty pleasure sometimes, but I need to kind of wean myself off of Facebook because I'm not finding a lot of value in it. The only thing I find is frustration, although you really do find some good, funny stuff on there every once in a while. So I might just use it for humor. Anyway, my activity on Facebook will be very much limited, but still be active on Twitter and paying more attention to my website, which I've been neglecting. So after all,
which is where you should be anyways.
Shut up. I know. I really do know this. So
well, it's just good that, I mean, obviously, like, you're a really intelligent individual, which is why I appreciate spending so much time with you. But it's a lot of smart people can't recognize when they're being actively dehumanized by technologies like Facebook.
It's not even dehumanization. It's like de-intelligencing myself, if that's even a word. I think I just made up a word.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely lowering my IQ, being on there all the time, looking at some of this, like, just absolutely bizarre stuff.
Well, there's, like, the dumbed-down aspect of it. And then there's this other kind of aspect where all these kind of Facebook arguments and political debates that you've engaged in over the past, you know, few months, years even, you got to almost stop and think to yourself, would this person be treating me this way, and would I be using the rhetoric that I'm using right now if this were a face-to-face conversation?
Nope.
And I think almost 100% of the time the answer is no, that you would be having a much more constructive dialogue.
Correct.
If you were in real life, or at least being able to see someone's face and hear their voice.
Right, and see their body language, and then we can, you know, come to an understanding in, as civilized human beings rather than people hiding behind keyboards. So yeah, I guess that was my realization. I happened to couple of days ago, so I made a post on, of course, announcing my relief of Facebook on Facebook. So I don't know if that's some kind of pun somewhere, but I'm sure it is. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. So as we go down this whole rabbit trail of rabbit trails, we were talking about the idea that it gets you into this mode of researching, and the one thing that I found that was really beneficial is it got me into a mode of questioning everything that I ever thought could be true. Now, sometimes you will run into a couple of snags, and we're going to cover some of these tonight, just things that I found that are basically traps. They're not anything that you can do anything about. And as I move forward in my life, that's the thing that I'm really starting to harp on, is that do things where you can make an impact. You can make an impact on social media, sure. You can make an impact on a radio show. You can make an impact on a website. Can you make an impact reading books about the Illuminati and understanding occultism? Nah, I mean, it'll give you something to do, and it'll be fun for cocktail parties. But it's really not going to help your way of life, and it's really not going to help you get out of this idea or this, basically, as Josh calls it, the panopticon, which it is, the panopticon of surveillance and all this other stuff that we face. So, and that's why I say the rabbit trails are in and of that. They are just rabbit trails. So let's start out with the Illuminati. What did I learn from the Illuminati? First, Josh, I don't know. I don't mean to throw this on you, but have you ever done any research for more than like 15, 20 minutes on the so-called Illumin one or the Enlightened ones?
No, of course. I mean, are we talking Adam Weishaupt's historical Bavarian Illuminati?
We're not talking about the Bavarian Illuminati, not talking about... Well, I mean, all right, start there. I guess we can start there.
Here's my thing. I think that's the only place you can start, because
sure.
Illuminati has become such a meme within popular culture. It's a mind virus where people who use that term...
Very good term. Mind virus. I like that.
Yeah, but they're typically not even referring to anything that could be historically identified as the Illuminati. It's
correct.
Kind of become a catchphrase for an elite ruling class,
sure.
which is historically disturbing. I guess I am going to disagree with the opening part of the opening bit of your thesis, in that I do think that an understanding of occult and esoteric knowledge is absolutely paramount to understanding the way that the world works around us.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
To the extent that you have a basic understanding of symbols, what they mean, that's why I wanted to get into sacred geometry. Once again, understanding the symbolism behind it is one thing, but diving deep into who does what and whose bloodline goes where is really just, that's what I was kind of getting at. So I probably should have clicked.
Okay, I got you.
So go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, the historical...
Research whatever the hell you want, guys, and you can come on my show and talk to me about it, and that's great.
Well, I mean, hey, if you're... if you're doing research at all, you've already got a one up on, I would say, 95% of the people consuming this information without doing anything about it. So, I mean, that's an active positive development. But yeah, the historical entity of the Bavarian Illuminati, you know, founded, I guess, supposedly on May 1st of 1776 by Adam Weishaupt,
mm-hmm.
And which kind of spread throughout Germany, England, and America through mm-hmm. British Freemasonic lodges.
Right.
It's a very real historical institution.
Right.
Its structure is very much the same structure as every secret society that came before it. Mm-hmm. After the Bavarian Illuminati was kind of outed in this country in the late 1800s, that structure was kind of borrowed for the Cecil Rhodes Roundtable, which I think is the group that most people are actually referring to when they talk about the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to make that distinction because it's a big distinction, right? One is a group of supposedly rogue Bavarians who are trying to infiltrate secret societies. The other is a system set up exclusively by the British Empire.
Right. And if you look at the ideas of the Bavarian Illuminati, the abolition of religion, the abolition of the moving into a 9-day work week, some of their ideas were a little bit skewed, but you know, some of those I can see value in an alternate mode of thinking. But you know, it's kind of a hodgepodge, but what I was referring to is the Illuminati are like the people that want to. And I'm not meaning to knock this guy, because I understand your stick, Mark Dice, but I mean, come on, dude. I mean, not everybody's entrenched in mind control. Now, there are people, and that's a really good question, Josh. Do you think that these people in Hollywood, do you think that they're a legitimate, quote-unquote, brought into the Illumin ones, or the occult, if you will, or are these people just trying to sell records?
No, I mean, Hollywood is and the entertainment industry, but Hollywood in particular, is an empirical structure. Empirical with an E, not an I. It's the structure of empire. It was set up by a bunch of rich American industrialists working with the British, right? So it's clearly an overt propaganda arm. There is clearly systematic child abuse that some people would identify as satanic going on there. There are clear mind control initiatives within the entertainment industry. Does that mean that Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know, sacrifice children
Kesha.
And Kesha sacrifice babies to Moloch or whatever? No, like, that, I mean, you can't, I don't think that you can kind of discredit the fact that some of these people might be more involved than we envision them to be.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, these people are just entertainers that are kind of told to flash the symbols, because this is, after all, kind of the age of revealing, is it not?
Yep, the age of Aquarius. So there you go. But it's what I find, I guess, me personally, I'm finding the Illuminati from the cartoon standpoint, what you were talking about, the people in black robes that are all scheming and sitting around a, you know, circular table vis-a-vis the eyes wide shut kind of mentality. I just don't think that, I mean, of course there are like satanic rituals that go on and things like that. I get that. I understand that. But to imagine that there are these a bunch of high priests that get together all the time and do nefarious things, I think it's a little bit silly. Especially trying to get people of the lower ranks to kind of get in on it, like you were saying, Kesha and these people. I think it's more to just sell propaganda now than it is for real mind control or manipulation. I think it's just to sell T-shirts, just to sell records, and to get them mentioned. Because if you say, oh, look, Kesha had an Illuminati symbol in this video, think about how many more people are going to watch that video that never, ever would even think about watching that video.
Well, I agree with the analysis to a certain extent. I think that one of the saddest things about the kind of obfuscation and simplification of this dialogue within the alternative media, specifically about the entertainment industry, is that if we take a look at kind of the mind control operations that we know about that have typically gone on within the entertainment industry,
mm-hmm.
you'd find that a lot of these people that are supposedly, you know, these Illuminati, you know, power brokers like Jay-Z and Miley Cyrus or whatever,
right.
There exists a significant possibility at least to my mind, that these people are indeed victims of the cult that they promote, right?
Sure. Justin Bieber's got a tattoo of an owl that looks like the Bohemian Grove, and they're all like,
I mean, I don't...
Symbology reads it behind it. He goes, oh, it's a secret. That's just such a freaking ploy to get people to at least start a conversation.
Well, I think that, like, it's important to be specific on this front. There are certain people who come into the game at a later stage in their life. I think Justin Bieber didn't, you know, find his fame until he was 14 or 15, something like that.
Correct.
Jay-Z, of course, comes in much later in life. Those aren't necessarily the people I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is systematic mind control that programs like MKUltra that have gone on. Yes, like child stars at Disney, which is a Nazi company.
Come on,
John,
with being racist.
Well, with people like the Feldman twins coming out, Corey Feldman and Corey Hines coming out and saying that, you know, they had been systematically abused as children while they were child stars, and said that it was true of almost every child star who worked within the industry. It's just that most of them won't talk about it. So there is an inherent and systematic kind of method of child abuse within Hollywood that's played upon. But I guess getting back to your larger point,
wouldn't that just be people being overt predators? I mean, isn't that like more of a predatory thing to prey on innocent children rather than some kind of, I mean, I guess you get a power trip out of it. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's predatory if you have one or even a couple individuals at one given studio doing this.
Sure.
When it's a system where you have multiple directors, executive producers, people on set at multiple studios that pass these kids around from place to place, and you know everyone who's on set kind of knows about it but doesn't really talk about it. That's something far larger than, you know, individual, you know, stories about abuse. I think that's a system that was put in place quite deliberately.
I guess it's just my, I don't know if what you would call it, my humanity that blocks the instinct to molest and to kill little kids. I don't get, I guess that's why it's just hard for me to imagine, because
that's why you're not Roman Polanski.
I mean, I guess that's what's so frustrating is, like, now we start down this rabbit trail, now we're inside the rabbit hole trying to find our way out of the Illuminati, but that's what really gets me is that, you know, you've had people that were senators, and I cannot remember the dude's name, he's a senator from Ohio right now, and that they came out with this accusation that there were a bunch of the high-ranking officials, or excuse me, public servants, I hate calling them officials, they're not officials, they're public servants, in Ohio that were actually running, like, child kidnapping rings, snuff films, like, you know, raping little kids, killing them, and I'm not just trying to be, you know, sensational here, I'm just giving you the facts. And he was like, there is absolutely no way this is true. So after he gets done with his Senate position, he goes and starts researching this, does an entire documentary on it. And he goes, oh yeah, it was all true and much, much worse. So I guess that's just me and I don't know what you would call it. I guess I'm a good person, so I can't imagine wanting to do something so nefarious to a little child. It's just really kind of bizarre. But anyway, you were going to say, speaking to my bigger point, I went off on a diatribe. I'm going to try to find that guy's name. Go ahead.
Oh, don't sweat it. I mean, because I think that it's an important discussion. But if we're going to zoom back here a little bit, you mentioned Mark Dice, and it's kind of wrapped up in his kind of Hollywood Illuminati overarching theory. Yeah. How do you feel, and it's something we talked about before on this show, about the general kind of cartoonization of conspiracy culture? In that when you become an actual deep political researcher, you find that the world is infinitely more complex than it's presented even in most of the alternative media. There are various groups and secret societies that, you know, kind of operate towards similar goals a lot of times, but in many instances don't get along and even go as far as killing some, you know, other members and this kind of, even beyond that, this historical chain of abuses that you can trace, Jake, like where, you know, most people refer to the Illuminati as this kind of blanket statement. But if they'd done their history, then they would realize that the people running the show in this country, at least, are Anglophiles.
Correct.
So, I mean, do you think that's a damaging pattern, not only for the credibility of the alternative media, but for the accuracy of the people who kind of follow it in terms of their beliefs.
Well, all right. So correct me or just to make sure I understand the question. So what you're saying is that the cartoonization of the Illuminati is kind of bringing down the idea of anybody searching for truth that would bring up something like that, or something like the Anglo-American establishment. It's easier for them to be pushed away or pushed off to a wayside as a conspiracy theorist. Is that what you were trying to get at?
I think that's part of it. And then the other part being, of course, that the people who think that they know what's going on in the world actually don't.
No, that's a very good point. And that's, I got to find that article. All right, because there was a really good article that was written a couple of days ago it was a writer at The Federalist, and I think my wife shared it with me, so let me find it. And it was talking about not to get too off track here, but it was talking about how media has this, they have this arrogance about them now, but they don't know anything. It's like they don't understand history, they got no reference points, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes that I'll have people that, here's a great example. A person shared with me a link about, you know, it was not about climate change. It was about let me see what it was about here. It was something to do with, like, the carrying capacity of the world. And I was like,
overpopulation, yeah.
I was like, Thomas Malthus. I'm like, and he goes, look, we don't have to read a book that's by a guy that's dead 150 years ago. We have stats from today. I'm like, listen.
He had statistics too. His were far more thorough than the ones that are bandied about today, and he was still a crazy eugenicist.
Yeah, and it's really sad that, you know, and he did have some revision. I was reading after I finished the paper, I was reading up on, you know, what he'd done after this, after he published this paper. He had like 7 revisions, and he added a bunch of different things to it. And I guess he started to realize at the end that he basically sold everybody a line of garbage, but he thought it was true at that point. So, but that's the article I sent to you, is the one that talks about how the media are people. And I just want to read this first couple of paragraphs because it really does shine a light on number one, who your sources are, because this is actually what we're talking about. When you go down these rabbit holes, make sure that the people that you're sourcing are credible, well-researched researchers, and you're not getting something off of some guy's blog post, because that will definitely throw you for a wrench, and then you'll go down some other rabbit hole thinking that you found the key to Solomon's temple, and in reality, you had no basis, or this person was really at no basis of reality. So here's the title of the article, and I'll post this in the show notes for the show. It says, media ignorance is becoming a serious problem. Yeah, we talk about this ad nauseum on the show. And it says, last week, conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt interviewed Zach Carter, who is the Huffington Post's senior political economy reporter. The interviewer's purpose was to discuss Carter's negative response to Hewitt's previous interview of former Vice President Dick Cheney. The interview was lively and interesting, but it didn't go well for Carter, who was forced to admit his ignorance of the historical content and the situation in Iraq. Looked at one way, the interview might seem almost like pointless point scoring. In response to Hewitt's questions, Carter admitted that he didn't know who Alger Hiss was. He also didn't know that he had ever read The Looming Tower, two questions which are standard questions for Hewitt's interviews. But then Carter said that he hadn't read various other books like Bernard Lewis's Crisis of Islam, Robin Wright's Dreams and Shadows, The Pentagon's New Map, he said, and it goes on and on, other ideas or other books. He said he did not read the political memoirs, including Dick Cheney's or George W. Bush's, and that he was unaware that Clinton had bombed Iraq in 1996 or that Gaddafi reportedly was disarmed in 2003. He did admit it. He had no clue who A.Q. Khan was, the father of the Pakistani bomb and the grandfather of Iran and North Korean nuclear programs. So this is the senior writer for, once again, the trash machine, Huffington Post, a.k.a. Yahoo or whatever, or AOL, whatever they're called now. But, Josh, does this not speak to what we're talking about here, is that if you go down rabbit trails, if you don't really get a broad spectrum of what's going on, you're going to be just as ignorant as the person that's, or nescient as the person next to you that you're criticizing the whole time about, oh, you don't get it, it's all a big Illuminati depopulation program. No, it's a eugenicist-based depopulation program set forth by the British Empire and now carried out by the Anglo-American establishment, in a nutshell.
Yeah, but that requires reading books. It requires reading books that may very well not be on the Federalist.com's reading list either, right?
Oh, absolutely, you know, not. I read those. I was like, okay, so why would I go read Dick Cheney's memoirs? I don't really need to read that. I don't need to read the puppet's memoirs. I need to read the comptroller's memoirs, the person that sets policy. That's who I need to read.
The article itself is kind of a meta joke because it's criticizing the sheer ignorance of most of the mainstream media while simultaneously kind of displaying the ignorance of the publication itself at the
Correct.
Federalist by not only recommending that people read these fairly mainline establishment, in the case of memoirs, ghost-written propaganda to get an understanding
of... And listen, those presidents sit there for hours upon hours and slave over what they're going to write in their memoirs.
Yeah, and Bill O'Reilly knows who killed Jesus, Kennedy, and Lincoln. Read those books. Those are New York Times bestsellers, too.
Oh, what a country. What a country. Okay, so let's put a capstone, pun totally intended, on the Illuminati. What are things for people to... All right, Josh, if you were telling somebody to research the Illuminati, what are things that you would tell them to look into, and what were things that you would tell them to stay away from?
In terms of publications that discuss the Illuminati, specifically,
if somebody wanted one book or one documentary or one source for you to say, "Hey, spend 2 hours looking at this to get just a background," what would you say?
I don't know if I could cite a single book or work on that topic. I mean, I think that's part of the problem that we're discussing inherently, is that, you know,
about Fritz Springmeier and why that his book is so popular yet controversial at the same time.
Fritz Springmeier's book, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, that Jordan Maxwell claims Fritz Springmeier stole from him.
I thought I'd throw
that in there.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at, is that, you know, even within the truth movement, you still have people that infight over data. And who knows if that's right? Who knows? And that's the whole thing, is that as we go through these rabbit holes, people, you have to realize that there are disinformation agents out there. Not everything that you read is going to be 100% truth. And it's probably going to be overshadowed. Anything that will be... it's kind of like what Mark Passio says. Any movie that gets absolutely smashed by the critics, go watch that movie. Because there is some esoteric thing in there that they do not want you to know. I would think it's the same kind of thing about any kind of book out there. Josh, you know, these off, like Fire in the Minds of Men that you sent me, I was like, I've never heard of this book. I've never even heard of the guy that wrote the book. So, you know, that's the kind of information that we're talking about here. It's so occulted that, you know, it's not like, you know, sold on the InfoWars store or anything like that. It's not going to be something that mainline. I just can't believe I said that InfoWars is mainline, even though it is becoming mainline as we speak. But
I mean, I would call it a pseudo alternative media kind of establishment at this point. Yeah, I don't think that's an unfair criticism.
And God bless them, man. You guys shook me out of my trance. But then over the last couple of years, since you guys got bought by Clear Channel, it has been an obvious shift in the rhetoric. It was very obvious, but. We should do a whole show on InfoWars.
Oh, God.
We'll have people poison our drinks or whatever.
Yeah, I don't want to get Melissa Melton or Aaron Dykes.
Whatever, it's fine.
Just don't go out drinking with former InfoWars coworkers. I guess that's the moral of the story.
Yeah,
don't go anywhere near Austin, Texas. How about that?
Yeah, that was actually told to us by another popular talk show host. Who shall remain nameless. To protect the innocent.
Yeah. He was also drunk at the time, so it's probably not something he would have shared sober.
Anyway.
He or she.
Yeah, that's okay, man.
Are there any prominent female alternative media radio hosts?
I don't know.
Besides Amy Goodman over at Democracy Now!, which isn't really an alternative media site.
A Rockefeller Now?
Yeah, Rockefeller Now. Okay. Soros Now.
Oh, Soros, yeah. One of the two. Yeah. All right, so I would say the Illuminati, there was a 32-part, and only because it was the 10-minute clip versions, that was called Bloodlines. I think it was called Bloodlines of the Illuminati, or Royal Bloodlines or something like that. I'll have to see if I can stir it up. But it was by this professor, and I watched it. God, I must have watched it 6 years ago when I started getting into all this stuff. And she went through about everything. And if I could ever find that documentary, I'll repost it. But evidently, she put this documentary out and then had to flee the country because of death threats. So there you go. I mean, it was hardcore, really, really good information. But
it's similar to, I forget the gentleman's name, who did a talk that I think I sent you. It was in an episode of Peace Revolution once. What's it called? I forget. But, I mean, he essentially goes through a breakdown of kind of these familial lineages for the past 1,000 years. And he gave that talk in South Africa. And I don't think that it's a coincidence that he gave that talk outside of the United States border proper.
Yeah, you can't do – I mean, dude, don't mess with the establishment, man. They will find you. And they're not playing games either. So, I mean, the only thing that you and I ever talk about is stuff that's already broken. So it's like, what are we
– Sometimes.
Sometimes.
That's about to change.
Shut up. You're making me nervous about it now. Anyway. Fun times ahead, everybody. Just needless to say, Josh and I might become very, very popular or very, very demonized. Very – not – in the too distant future.
Or we'll be forgotten.
Yeah.
Buried.
I hope that I'm not forgotten. I do have a kid, so hopefully we'll be forgotten. But if we are, this radio show will live on hard drives and on backup discs and in the cloud, the quote cloud. Anyway, enough nonsense, everybody. So let's talk about another rabbit trail. The other favorite rabbit trail. I'm going to skip the sacred geometry because that's a rabbit trail that I recommend because that will really open your eyes. And if you want a really good kind of intro to that, go watch on my favorite list on my YouTube page, not to promote my YouTube page because I hardly ever promote anything that I do. Go check it out. It's under my favorites. It's called, I think it's called Sacred Geometry, and it's like sections 1 through 6. I would watch all of those because they're very, very informative. It gets you into the Fibonacci sequence, it gets you into the golden number, it gets you into a whole bunch of different things that you probably never even thought of, and it breaks out a lot of the, is it esoteric, Josh, when we have symbols?
I would call it it's esoteric knowledge, certainly.
Correct. Okay, there we go. And also, there is a documentary on my website about the esoteric agenda as well. So go under my website and go under documentaries and check that out also.
There's also a Disney cartoon with Donald Duck explaining the Fibonacci sequence and the golden ratio to people without kind of giving you the whole story. So if you want to see an animated production for children by Nazis about, the golden ratio and sacred geometry, then Disney gave you one in the mid-70s. It's on YouTube if you want to go check it out.
Send it to me because I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. All right, so we're unocculting a whole bunch of stuff here. This will be fun. All right, so moving on. Let's talk about the aliens, man. Let's do it. We got a whole, almost a half an hour. I figured that'd be enough time for you and I to talk about the aliens.
I was about to say, I'll talk your ear off about aliens.
All right, so listen. We know that they came down. We know that they've programmed us with the RNA to mine gold for them and their space colonies. So other than that, what do I not know about the ancient alien theory?
Well, see, it's true because Zechariah Sitchin told me it was true. And then I saw Giorgio Tsoukalos on Ancient Aliens, and I was like, wow, his hair is wild. It's almost out of this world.
He must be
an
alien.
Yeah, there you go.
Giorgio Tsoukalos, wasn't he just a con artist? Isn't he the one that basically started all this ancient aliens mumbo jumbo and is like?
Oh no! It's much older than that.
Well, I know
much older than that.
But he's the one that brought the dusted off the cover and brought the new, the new ancient alien theory to light. That's the guy that's kind of heavy set, like from Argentina or something like that. On the
He's not heavy set. You might be thinking of Zachariah Sitchin or Eric von Däniken.
I'm getting conflated.
There are a lot of ancient aliens theorists that have cropped up over the past 60 or 70 years. So,
hey, and our own Karen Hudis believes that the Vatican has cone heads.
The crypto hominid people. Well, it's either crypto hominids, interdimensional beings, or space creatures.
Okay.
And then you got the David Icke reptilians, yeah, but I guess those are space creatures.
Give us David Icke's brief breakdown, and I'll give you 5 minutes to give us the once-over on David Icke's book.
I don't know if David Icke has like a succinct breakdown, because a lot of what he says is very accurate information until you get to the part about the lizard people living underground.
Okay, so where does that come from?
Shape-shifting lizard people. Well, I mean, if we're being truly historically accurate here, which is why I think the ancient aliens kind of thesis is, in many times, the last kind of exploration that people do, one, because, or the moon landing, but that's a topic for another day. But the ancient aliens thing, it's just that so many of these roads lead
The guy that plays God on the universe, the guy that plays God that's got it, Neil deGrasse Tyson, told me that the moon landing happened.
Well, the moon landing, again, is a topic for another day. That's a big one. But when we talk about kind of the ancient aliens theory, it's important to remember that so many people kick down that final door and find aliens there. I explored that idea as well for quite some time. But it's the realization that you have to trace the lineage of the idea, not of the ideas that are given to you by ancient aliens theorists. I'm not saying go back to ancient Egypt and start looking for, you know, hieroglyphs of helicopters. Although some of those things are very interesting, and I don't doubt that we may have been visited by non-human entities at some point in our past. Like, I am not a time traveler, so I can't verify that information for you.
Think about what 10,000 years would do to a car, though. It would completely erode the car in 10,000 years.
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't exist anymore.
Correct. So
I guess that's a lot of these people's arguments, is that right, you would just make biodegradable technology that, you know, couldn't be unearthed ever.
But they didn't have global warming back then.
But I'm saying don't follow that chain of ideas. Instead, follow the chain of ideas of the ancient aliens theorists themselves, because ultimately you find that in the modern age, this all comes from one place, and it's the Theosophical Society, which was set up by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky in the mid-1800s, became very popular through the mid-1800s to the early 1900s. And she's the one who essentially says, I have been initiated into the Tibetan mystery schools, and this is the ultimate secret. This is what they teach in the Grand Lodges of Freemasonry and the Rosicrucian Order, et cetera, et cetera. And she says, here it is. Here's the history of mankind, ancient aliens. And this is in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. It became a very, very popular school of belief, but it's important to note that it's essentially set up, funded, and founded by the Anglo-American establishment before the Cecil Rhodes Roundtable.
I think you're a conspiracy theorist.
Things like this, the Society for Psychical Research, the American Society for Psychical Research, the Fellowship for a New Dawn, the Fabian Socialist Society. A lot of these people were theosophists. And when I don't want to get into this too much, because this is something that we're going to get into over One Step Beyond.
Mm-hmm. Laying the groundwork here, so you can reference this podcast.
Yeah, it's a good format to do that in. But it's important to realize that the same Anglo-American motherfuckers, quite frankly, who have been monkeying with all of human history.
Oh, yeah, by the way, people, that is not a profane statement. That was actually a historical reference with Josh. That is their historical name. If you look at it in full, that is their historical given name. Go ahead.
I didn't actually think about it that way, but I'm sure that at some point in time, some of them did to preserve their bloodlines. But but it's that idea, that realization is makes you question that idea of the Anglo-American establishment and of the ancient aliens theories mm-hmm. on a completely different level, because now you see it's this form of kind of psychological warfare that may indeed be a prerequisite for, you know, extraterrestrial false flags, which sounds outlandish, but that's not me saying that. That's the Defense Department. You can go
Project Bluebeam.
Well, Project Bluebeam is not actually documented and verifiable, but what is documented and verifiable is the exact same operation that they planned to do in 2002 in Iraq, where instead of projecting Jesus up into the sky, they were going to project Allah and have them all put down their guns. So given that information, I think it's fairly plausible that something like a Bluebeam-esque program was in development. But
Bluebeam was back in the... Anyway, now I don't want to go down that rabbit trail.
Wasn't it early 80s?
I thought it was late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. But that's an important realization to make. The other one that I think is so intimately important to discuss when we talk about the Theosophical Society is the understanding that psychology was very... It still is, but at the turn of the century through, I would say, about the mid-1970s in academia, psychology was not what we know it as today.
Drugs and all that? Come on, man.
Well, I mean, that it's become far more efficient, and it kind of masquerades as a science, but psychology and mysticism were the same thing for most of psychology's history. It was an entire branch of psychology called parapsychology.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what most of these theosophists were. Most of them were Fabian socialists and parapsychologists. So the ideas of people like Sigmund Freud and the ideas of people like Guido von Liszt, another, I guess he's a former transhumanist, but another theosophist, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Guido von Liszt, of course, being the guy who helps to promote the Thule Society and sets up this esoteric agenda that ultimately leads to Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these are two just members of Viennese high society, and they're both psychologists. And for most of human history, that's how this stuff was viewed. Things like remote viewing, things like out-of-body experiences, things like telepathy were made out to be scientific studies.
Right.
And of course, we know that these are kind of outlandish things, but... Well, okay, we'll hold off because we are about to do a 3-part podcast series on a lot of this stuff, so we don't want to blow our load all in one place.
Right, as Josh once again gets excited about the ancient aliens. No, there is some validity to it. Once again, people, the thing that makes the rabbit hole so enticing is that at least you're looking for answers. At least you're looking for some reason that we're in the shape that we're in. Is it because we're put in a compromised position by our DNA and RNA? Is it because we're enslaved by a religious cult? Is it because the educational system is horrible, so you have to go out and seek knowledge for yourself? Well, it's a little bit of all of those things. And if you think about it in a broad perspective, and I think that that's where we have to kind of pull it back and really understand that the more that we understand bits and pieces of the bigger picture, the better you can navigate through this stuff. If you're an expert in some of these areas, you're going to miss, like what Josh said, you're going to miss the big picture if you stop at the alien, if you kick down the last door and the alien's there, you're like, oh, cool, I found it. I found the answer. It's kind of like, that's my only knock on the InfoWars kind of crowd, is that they broke through the first level of mind control. And I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. Maybe we talked about it with Robert. But there's all these like little nets to ensnare you once you bust through the door. You bust through the door, you get ensnared in the net of the Illuminati. You get ensnared in the net of the aliens. You get ensnared in the net of politics. You get ensnared in the net of economics, where it's all of these different things that are kind of going on simultaneously, and you have to just pull it back and say, all right, where does this really start? Where does my awakening begin? Does my awakening begin as I'm out of the Matrix? Where do I go from here? Maybe that should be a show that we should do one day, Josh. Maybe part of the One Step Beyond. Is that now that you're out of the Matrix, where do you go? Where should you go to? And if I could put myself back 7 years ago, I would have ran, not walked, to the Trivium. Because when I'm starting to see the tools of intellectual self-defense and how crucial they are to not only everyday life, but understanding how to navigate through the minutiae and the mind control and the manipulation. Of course, I took marketing for 4.5 years, and I got a degree in it, so I understand the manipulation coming from the commercial perspective and how they're doing these things and why they're doing them, but I never understood the human manipulation of words, and that we don't use words like we use the word ignorance as meaning that person doesn't know something, and that's not what the term means. And so we get off of this baseline of you not only have a language, but you have a dialect, and once the dialect gets discombobulated, now we really don't have a basis to communicate, and so now we're all screwed. It doesn't matter how many, you know, how well you know the ancient alien theory, if you can't communicate it to somebody that doesn't understand where you're coming from, and removing the logical fallacies that they put up in place to protect their own ego or protect their own, you know, their own ideas or ideology that they developed, then we're basically getting nowhere. So let's continue down this ancient aliens path, because it's kind of fun. And I'm sorry I went on that diatribe for a second, but that's where I would recommend everybody go once you break out of the Matrix. Is if you're catching this show and you've just come to the light that, hey, there's some really nasty people that have been doing and manipulating society for a very long time, and they have what's called a Fabian socialist plan. Fabian not meaning that it's any kind of a label or a quote-unquote, it's not a type. It's delineating the time periods that they do things. Is that a pretty fair assessment of what Fabian socialism is? It's socialism over time.
And the process of slow escalation of that process unfolding.
Okay. So once, and then as soon as you have the Trivium, or as soon as you have a rudimentary understanding of the Trivium and the Quadrivium, then you can break down these mental barriers. I was looking today, Josh, at this, you know, I was talking to my wife when we were talking about white privilege, and I said that it's kind of a throwaway term. I understand that there are prejudices, and I understand that that's happened throughout human history. It's just the nature of human beings. If I see you and you don't look like me, then obviously there's going to be some kind of uncomfortableness between the two of us. But if I see you and you look like me and you're my same height and all that other stuff, and that's just going back to like rudimentary human programming of the tribes that we grew up in, you know, and stuff like that. So it has nothing to do with race or anything. And I said that, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably might be, who knows. But I said the idea of white privilege is silly for two reasons. Number one, it's silly because there will be no white privilege in about 20 years, is that, you know, the white Anglo race will be the minority, and there will be no such thing as white privilege. And number two, it actually argues against what they're pushing for. They're pushing for the idea of the individual being, you know, noticed, or what's a good term here? The individual being accepted. And as on an individual basis, like yourself and myself, you and I interacting, you're supposed to look at me as an individual, but yet they lump all of us in together and call us white privilege and say that we are enacting our white privilege. So basically it's counterproductive to what they really want, but they don't see it that way because their outcome is once again skewed in the fact that they have to put people in a box. You have to group people together in order to categorize them and to make statements about them so that they can be ridiculed and they can be punished and that they can be looked down upon and they can be shunned. And you guys are playing into the trap. It's basically a false paradigm of there's really only one way to look at another human being, and that's on an individual basis. And the older I get, the more I'm starting to see that, and the more I try to do it in my day-to-day life. And any kind of stereotype I had or any kind of predetermined ideology that I brought to the table, I am now throwing it away. You know, as you and I talked about, Josh, we both went down the idea of anarcho-capitalism. We both went down to the bottom of that and think that, hey, this is a great idea. And yes, in a society where everyone is educated and everybody uses the Trivium, hey, it would probably work. But it's just, it's not there given the foundations that have set up this educational system and how they're going to manipulate you and not let you get out of the paradigm because they control the paradigm and that's where they want you. It's so easy. So the aliens did it, Josh.
It was all the aliens.
Yeah.
Let's ask Madame Blavatsky. Maybe we can channel her spirit right now.
But
if we meditate hard enough.
But is it human nature to be was that a pretty fair assessment? I know Freud would say that that's pretty fair.
Well, I kind of want to extend on that a little bit because I think it's a trap that a lot of people fall into when they learn about kind of catalyzing single events. We've talked about in the show a number of times that the term waking up is a very deceptive term because that's a binary state, right? You're either asleep or you're awake.
Right.
And as opposed to being awake, meaning that, you know, you turned on your faculties of critical thinking, so all of these kind of plans that will run in the future, you'll be able to identify. And it's a constant process of learning and continuing to learn as opposed to just kind of considering yourself an enlightened human being, right?
Right.
But it gets back to this
idea. Alex Jones 3 hours a day.
It's cool. I know the truth. Alex just wanted to call in and say, great show today, buddy. Fighting the New World Order. You're the best. I got my Remington 870. I'm sitting out on the front porch with my sweet tea. Now I'm just
silly. It's okay, man. Show. People enjoy the humor, but like, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just did want to say, I think that it's this kind of psychological craving to restore that one moment where you found out whatever it is you found out. For most people, it's a catalyzing event like September the 11th. Or the Federal Reserve System that just kind of jars you out of your state of kind of, complacency
mm-hmm.
and forces you into some kind of action, whether that's mental, physical, or a combination of the two.
Right.
But I think that in a certain sense, a lot of alternative media followers are adrenaline junkies in that manner. They're constantly looking to regain that feeling of power and fear simultaneously because right. it's finding out that September the 11th is not what you thought it was or that your money is not what you think it is. That's a feeling unlike anything else you will probably experience over the course of your life. So it's so powerful and catalyzing that people try and regain that kind of spark. So they're very prone to people listening to outlandish stories, even some of those promoted by the alternative media that are just not true, simply because they like the idea of believing this grand kind of idea yet again. It gives them that same feeling.
And we have come full circle with the rabbit hole. That is exactly it. That is why the rabbit hole is so dangerous, because in the search for looking for that feeling that you want to find the illumined ones, you want to point them out, you want to find the secret cabal that's running the entire planet. No, it's not that easy, guys. It's not just a bunch of people sitting in a room smoking cigars, pressing buttons. I really wish it was, because we'd go find the damn room and stuff would be restored. It has nothing to do with that. Once again, it's a Fabian process, very long, drawn out, planned out, and that's why all of these things that you see, and you see the people around you becoming more and more entrenched in either popular culture or sports, because they're realizing as the economy turns down, as all of these things start slowly getting shut down, as the borders start becoming open, as they bring in the North American Union, as they are the not only the prognosticators, but the, what is a, is progenitor, what would progenitor be?
I'd say they're progenitors okay.
of a very long-term goal to create a one world, I guess if you look at the Bill Cooper model, a one world socialist nation. And guess what? They have ideas and actuaries of where they want to be, and they're a little bit behind, so that's why you see the border get opened up, and it where all these people are getting bussed in. Now they're starting to play word games with the American people to say, "Oh no, they're not illegal aliens. They're migrants. They're just migrants, people. They're just unaccompanied kids, is what they are." Yeah, There aren't a company voting blocks that are going to come in, and then they're going to get put in the system, and they're going to be abused in the system, and it's just horrible. Like, why would you want that for somebody? I understand that, you know, these parents have put their kids on these trains to America to give them a better life, but we're not in a financial position currently where we can sustain that. It's like was I talking to you about that, Josh, where they had the woman that was interviewed and said that we just need to open our hearts and let all these people in. America is so wealthy. We're the richest nation in the world. And I'm like, what planet are you on? How much gold do we own? Do we even own any? China owns a whole bunch. And paper money's about to go down. I mean,
there is this overriding element of, it's kind of this sick and cyclical situation where you're getting this influx of migrant workers, quote unquote, into America. But at the same time, you would not have an environment where those people would want to come here were it not for America and the Anglo-American establishment.
Correct.
Systematically screwing over Mexico and South America.
And Guatemala and Ecuador and basically...
That falls under the umbrella of South America. I can't name a South American country that we have not run black ops in the past 50 years or given loans to.
Well, I mean, come on, man. The International Mafia Federation. I mean, the International Monetary Fund. Those guys are good people. World Bank's good people. They're just trying to help a country out, man. I mean,
yeah, another British institution, right?
I know they're just trying to help people out, man. It's okay. It's okay. Look, who gets to pay the debt? Don't follow the money. Don't do that. Don't follow the money, Josh. We just need to look. We need to give those people more power plants. We need to take the Panama Canal. We need to give that to China. Oh, oops, we already did that. So that's just mind blowing to me. Sorry, we got 3 minutes, man. Let's What did you see in the? You probably didn't even read any news. What set your light bulb off the last couple of days? What did you read? What did you hear that added another level to your understanding of how all this stuff works?
Just in general, or on this topic specifically? I mean, in general, I've just been doing a lot of research for the Research Collective. The past couple of months, actually. So hopefully, some of that'll start to roll out pretty soon. I recently came across a paper that I'm pretty sure I had seen someplace before, but kind of paid it little mind.
In case you guys don't know, Josh is my reference point for the obscure but yet very profound information.
Yeah, well, this is I think this one falls under that category. You can look it up. It's the title of this paper is called "How to Make a Mint."
Ooh,
the cryptography.
Yeah. I'm gonna put that in the show notes.
Yeah, the cryptography of anonymous electronic cash, and this was a study commissioned by the NSA and written up by a team of MIT professors, and it essentially explains a digital cash-based system. It even uses the same terminology that's found in the Bitcoin white paper, referring to these units as coins. Talking about, you know, the cryptographic hashing functions being identical to the Bitcoin protocol. And this was written, drumroll, in
1996.
Close.
Damn.
In 1996. So it's...
Oh, that was the same year that, JP Morgan Chase developed their cryptocurrency. Was it
indeed,
not?
Indeed it was, or at least their digital payment protocol. This protocol specifically, though, is J.P. Morgan's is a little bit technologically different, whereas this is...
Was it J.P. Morgan or Goldman Sachs? I think it was J.P. Morgan, right?
It was J.P. Morgan. But this paper is different from the J.P. Morgan protocol in that it is... Just read this paper and read the Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever they are... read these papers side by side, and if they're not essentially almost carbon copies of one another, I don't know what to tell you.
I think conspiracy theorists, that's what I would tell you. Listen, you're using big words like cartography and stuff on here. I think that we're just gonna have to cut it off.
Well, I do want to come out and say that this doesn't mean that I'm against, you know, cryptocurrencies or anything as a blanket statement, because if I were a global comptroller who wanted to use this system to my benefit, I would not make it open source. which of course Satoshi Nakamoto did make it open source. But in a sense, it's kind of cannibalizing itself because of that. So you never know.
Here's another question for you. Did you get to read that article that I sent you about the new email platform called Inbox that they're going to be dropping?
I did.
What do you think of that?
The MIT Dropbox.
Hey, it's open source software, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're moving into a direction where that term doesn't mean anything because most people aren't coders.
Oh, that's very true, but at least, I mean, if they release source software, I told my wife that the beauty of that would be that you could actually have people go in and look at the code and see what they're taking as far as your metadata goes, what they're tracking, if they're tracking anything, how secure it is, if you can hack it, and then they can make programming notes to it, and they can change it.
I think that's why it's a bit of a sick joke in a sense, because it's a cloud-based email service. So all of it is stored on, you know, central, unencrypted for the most part, central mainframes that also simultaneously store your files now. Sure. So there's not, they don't really need to put malicious code in there because you're giving this stuff to them. I think technologies like startmail.com, which is an actual encrypted email service.
Is that from StartPage?
Yes, it is from StartPage. I mean, it's a paid service.
They have it up and running now?
I don't think it's available to the public. I am a beta tester.
Damn.
So, I have an account. It's pretty nifty. Or something like...
page for my web browsing.
I think I can send you an invite, but, I mean, yeah, I recommend startpage.com or .org.
Startpage.org.
Yeah, startpage.
Hold on.
I think it's .com.
Yeah,
startpage.com.
Startpage.com. There we go.
Yeah, startpage.com is a great search engine because it uses the Google API, but it doesn't store or track any of your information. So, I mean,
But you don't get the fun little fill-ins, Josh.
Yeah, I highly recommend that people start paging things instead of Googling things. I've been doing it for a year now, and I haven't missed out on anything, at least to my knowledge, because of it. But I guess I wouldn't know if I was. But I think that technologies like StartMail and like BitTorrent Sync, which is, I sent you an email about it the other day or a text message, and I described it as the anti-cloud.
What?
Because that's exactly what it is. It uses cryptography to send files directly to people using very fast upload and download speeds, much like a torrent, but you're synchronizing with another system directly. And kind of leeching and seeding that one file at one time or a collection of files, whatever you're sending to this individual.
We could get super nerd because I want to ask you about the protocols and stuff. If it's like a if it's like an FTP portal that you got to send a link to in order to create the handshake, or how does that happen?
I don't think it's FTP. I'm pretty sure it's based on the like a torrent based kind of protocol,
okay.
But
understood.
But it is cryptographic in nature. You upload these files to a specific folder on your hard drive,
right.
And for each file or set of files that you want to send to someone, mm-hmm. It generates a cryptographic hash function or a private key that the other person then has to enter to unlock the files.
Ah, then everybody, you just got nerded out right there. That was pure nerddom. Thank
well,
you.
Well,
no, both
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, but I mean, we're nerdy guys in general, but please, if you're using a service like Dropbox right now, stop using it. One, there's no reason why you should use it in a BitTorrent Sync world because there's no upload and download limits. There's no premium accounts. But we're about to enter a society where we are in a society right now where you have a choice about where you store your data. Do you store it privately on a hard drive that you control, that you can control the internet access to and the operating system that runs on it? Or do you want all of your information and your personal files in the cloud stored on centralized servers that you have no control over?
Come on, man. There's good people in the cloud. Good people in the cloud. I can't knock the cloud.
Google Plus is on the cloud.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, isn't Google an advertising firm?
Well, I mean, I know they have their AdSense division.
Yeah, just checking. I think.
Yeah, that's headquartered. It's one of the tallest buildings in the city of Ann Arbor.
Oh, there you go.
Google AdSense is based, yeah, out of U of M.
Who's keeping track, man? It doesn't matter. All right, well, that's it for the show, everybody. Thank you to Josh Wiley of the OneStepBeyond.me. And thank you to myself for coming on, and hopefully we produced a show that was not only listenable, but that you kind of pulled something away from. That's all you're trying to do here is just to pull one piece of info out of this podcast that you thought was useful and that you can apply to your everyday life and make your life better and make the people's lives around you better, then that's all that we're here for. We're trying to change the world one person at a time, one mind at a time, and God darn it, we're going to do it. So thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, get a friend, get informed, and get involved. Share the word about the podcast. Share the word about the Research Collective, and look for big things coming from us out of the onestepbeyond.me. And when we are also, I need to set up a date for the giveaway. So tentatively, everybody, we're going to shoot for, I'm going to say, I want to do it like the end of August.
What Jake's trying to tell you is that he has already used the free courses on himself, and he's now a lethal weapon.
Yeah, so. Nobody break down my door. It's over. All right. Looking at probably August the 28th, so the last Thursday in August, or we could do it on the Sunday show, which would be August 31st. Yeah, let's do August 31st. So I'm going to give it away on the Sunday show. I'll do a Sunday evening show that night so that we can have plenty of time for people to call in, win the prizes, and that'll give me enough time to get the logistics and stuff worked out to get it from Ethan. Big shout out to Ethan. Thank you so much for donating that stuff to the podcast and, you know, letting people get their skills fine-tuned to be, you know, not only members of the Intellectual Self-Defense Club, but the actual Self-Defense Club.
He's a heads-up cat, too.
He is. He's
should
good.
Have him on more often.
I know. We should. Anyway, we'll get him on here. We will get. And, hey, if anybody out there is listening, and I know that you guys are, that was a really stupid mistake. Not time for the exit audio yet. If you guys want to be part of the show, send me a message. If you guys have a topic you want me to cover, send me a message. There was a listener that sent me a message about Bitcoin, Josh. He wants us to do a show on Bitcoin. Gave me a couple of reference articles so that we can do a legit show on that. So,
and they're all from Coindesk.org or .com or whatever.
I'm sure.
I don't know.
I don't even know. But if it is, I'm going to laugh. But anyway, she asked us to do a show on that, so we're going to do that. So if you guys got ideas for shows that you want us to cover, nothing too obscure. Obviously, we're not going to cover ant people or reptiles underneath Lake Michigan or something like that. We're probably not going to get into that stuff.
But Michigan Dogman.
Sure. Or the Yeti. We might cover the Yeti one show. Who knows? But if you got an idea for the show, let us know. We'll run it over and see if we can make something out of it. So that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. Share the show with people you love, people you know, people you like. Tell them to tune in live if they want to tune in. And we will see you on Sunday. Take care. Might as well be called terrorism now, right? If you want to be terrorism. Look at the immigrants thing if they come from the mic.